Alors, après l'intervention de Sylvia, je préférerais intituler mon intervention « Lire Rig Veda après Sayana ». Excusez-moi pour vous adresser en anglais. The title is actually a little bit different, and it addresses something that supposedly should be stored in a traditional school for Vedic recitation in Western Indian Peninsula, and that was edited some times ago, almost half a century, in 1947, after presumably one manuscript by P.K. Gowda. I took a trip over there to see whether the manuscript is there in the school, which is quite a picturesque place. It's western, southwest Maharashtra, the coastal area. All looks a little bit more pink than on these pictures, with the laterite stone. There is a patashala there still working. Students are studying, but they are not reading Sayana. They read something which is a little bit different, that proves to have constituted some time ago as a sort of a canon, a regional canon for studying Rig Veda in Maharashtra, rather not followed in other regions. they have a manuscript library over there, but it is in a state of an utter disorder. A list of manuscript, a handwritten list of manuscript, does not show anything like Bhattaji's Bhashya Sara, which I'm going to speak about in a moment. Neither a random attempt, wild attempt by everybody who was there within the place, did bring any result for finding the thing, which in its edition looks more or less like that. But that might probably have looked this way, more or less. This is probably 18th century manuscript from Maharashtra of Sayana, its commentary. All right, maybe that's enough. So, by sheer coincidence, I'm going to address the same study by Louis Renou as Sylvia did. It's like a miracle. In his remarkable essay of 1928, Louis Renou wrote that Vedic philology, as such, has been made by a few extraordinary personalities, quelques hommes remarquables ont fait la philologie védique. It was them and their passions, notes Renou, rather than methods tendencies, who left their stamp on the development of the Vedic studies of the period. For Renou, they were the masters, le maître of the Vedic philology. And in 1928, he believed that already in the times of Bourneuf, of Bourneuf's seminar, it was clear what made a master in Vedic philology. Sur le domaine du Veda, comme ailleurs, on reconnaît la marque du maître, largeur du vue dans la conception, rigueur minutieuse dans l'exécution. While we may probably still agree what makes a rigorous study rigorous today, it may not be so clear what makes a profound and large concept of the philological study. Renou admits that for his reconstruction, he attempted to, by his essay, he used not only the texts proper of Bergain, Rosen, Roth, Fischel, Marx, Miller, Oldenburg, or Gardner, but prefaces, prologues, a conclusion, and conclusions to their works, where he believed they had left formulations of their academic beliefs. It's good to hear that there is something of Gardner still waiting to be unearthed in that shape. Where he believed that they had left formulations of their academic beliefs. Les professions de foi qu'ils ont données dans leur préface, etc. Each and every maître had a concept of the Veda, which according to Renu had to be retrieved and articulated. Resterait à définir la conception qu'Herod se faisait du Veda dans la mesure où sa philologie ont assoubi l'influencer. For Roth and others, this concept had, among else, something to do with their understanding of the native philology in the person of Sayana. Ce n'est pas à dire qu'il faille avec Oldenburg rejeter absolument l'autorité de Sayana, c'est Renaud, là où il n'est à la merci ni d'une étymologie préconçue, ni d'un usage de son temps, il y a pu puiser à quelques sources authentiques. This mixed attitude towards Sayana as a native philologist needs perhaps a study, which Sylvia has already done, in its own, but I'm not aiming at it at one today. In his essay, Louis Renou appears to conceptualize a history of a knowledge discipline, and he must have been aware in 1928, I think, that he himself had been continuing and prolonging, not recopying, this current marked by the metre, but in his own new way. Now I'm going to offer you today a quick parallel of the concept of what can be named roughly a textual study in the form of a commentary pertaining roughly to the same object, namely the Veda, and in particular the Rig Veda, but professed by other masters of the field according to different conventions and concepts that they must have developed differently in different socio-historical situations. As has been noticed already some time ago by a few of our colleagues who are with us today, like Sheldon Pollock, Jan Huben, Madhav Deshpande, and others, a community of scholars that formed itself towards the end of the 16th century in the North Indian city of Benares betrayed characteristics of a historical self-consciousness of a generation of new scholars who more often than not aspired to the status of masters, maîtres, in the sense functionally not far from that outlined by Renou. I take as my case study here only one of them, namely Bhattoji Dikshita, the more so that the personality that seems to link almost mysteriously European master philologists with the work of this author is the 14th century master of Vedic commentary by the name of Sayana, whose work Bhattoji resolved to involve, if not emulate, in his own, albeit by the name of Madhava, the brother of Sayana. And this work, or rather its basic concept, makes the object of this presentation. In other words, I'm going briefly to address a few basic issues concerned with Bhattoji's Veda Bhashya Sara, or the essence of the commentary on the Veda, a work that surfaced not long ago in western part of Indian Peninsula, in what is called now coastal Maharashtra. My interest in the basic concept behind this type of work, or this type of textuality, remains inspired partly by the theoretical considerations of the so-called Begriffsgeschichte, or conceptual history, of Reinhard Koselleck. The type of history thinking that feeds on the distinction between natural and historical temporality and on the change in the meaning of and function of basic sociocultural and political concepts over time. And I'd like to outline briefly two of such concepts, you know, how they interplayed in the work mentioned above, and as well as how they changed over time. These concepts are those indicated in the title of the work, namely the Bhashya and the Sara. Of course, I'm not going to sketch how these concepts changed in history in general, a topic worth considering in itself, but only what can be tacitly inferred from the Bhattoji's Veda Bhashya Sara. We have touched briefly in the reluctant attitude of the classical masters of European philosophy towards Sayana and their influence towards the implications of the concept of Bhashya at the same time. Now, did it mean the same thing to write a Bhashya in 16th, 17th century Maharashtra on Benares, or Benares, as it did in 14th century Kingdom of Vijayanagara, as was the case of Sayana and his famous brother Madhava Vidyaranya, In the latter case, we have a relatively well-known project of imperial design and size, a project of commenting on the whole of the Veda, backed by the ambitious early rulers and made into a series of commentaries, given a pronounced royal as well as religious backing. But what about Bhattaji? We have nothing as concerns why and for whom his Bhashya could have been composed. Was it a matter of a show-off as a versatile polymath, as probably Kavindracharya, another ambitious intellectual of the time, did? we don't know. Bhattaji features as not only an ambitious grammarian and a philosopher of language, but also as an author of an array of number of other works, some of them religious, some of philological inclination, and somewhat surprisingly, one Vedic Bhashya. It seems that no other of his contemporaries could boast of one, except perhaps for his already mentioned, perhaps rival Kavindracharya of Benares. Was there a patron who ordered it? We don't know. What we may surmise, however, is that composing one that claimed an essence for the most famous Madhava Sayanas one must have been an act of asserting one's position as a versatile author, Sarva Vidya Nidhana, perhaps. Can we call it a historical thinking on the part of Bhattaji? Was his concept of a Vedic Bhashya a historical one? Some two centuries after the inception of the state of Vijayanagara and its unique commentarial project, when the ruins of the plundered huge city of victory stood already for a legend and the Vijayanagara empire dwindled to its eastern territories overseen by the kings referred to as the Aravidu dynasty, Bhattaji wrote his Veda Bhashya Sara perhaps in the western coast of Maharashtra towards the end of 16th or beginning of 17th century. The splendor of the huge empire of Vijayanagara to the far south must have been already the matter of legendary tales, though the last dynasty's rulers with no land still received imperial respect from their former commanders and local governors, the Nayakas, now independent rulers on their own. We know one of them to be a patron of a work of his, namely Bhattaji's. Bhattaji happens to be counted as one of the so-called new intellectuals on the pan-Indian 16th and 17th century intellectual scene. If we count his Veda Bhashya work as his, in what sense could it be new in his time and his intellectual and social context? We need to note first that his work, in the form it reached us, has been represented somewhat misleadingly as Veda Bhashya Sara, while it should be named perhaps rather Rig Veda Bhashya Sara, as it actually had been addressed by the guardian of its only manuscript, Pandit Patankar of Rajapur. What Bhattaji himself says in his introductory verses is only that he is presenting a Sara, or an essence, of Madhava Acharya's Veda Bhashya Maha Arnava, which must be a rhetoric device of respect rather than reference to any particular Bhashya. First thing that comes to my mind are basic questions. A question concerning composition. Why Bhashya on the Rig Samhita at all? Why a Sarasvata Brahmana from Maharashtra, whom perhaps Bhattaji was, acting first as a Vaishnava priest and later as a grammarian and philosopher of language, undertakes to write a Bhashya commentary on the Rig Samhita? Is it possible that the rivalry between Bhattaji and another polymath of the time and the Maharashtrian Brahmana too, Kavindra Acharya Sarasvati, could be a reason? There are hints to Bhashya by Kavindra Acharya being noted in Bengal. Another question concerning the transmission. Has Veda Bhashya Sara of Bhattaji ever been copied or recopied? Was there a local tradition of its being used for any practical purpose? The only manuscript of the work has been preserved around Rajapur, a traditional region of Gauda Sarasvata Brahmins, a community from which Bhattaji hailed. Apparently, it has not been preserved in Benares. P.K. Gauda thought the manuscript he had in his hands around 1941, I think, to be some I quote, 250 years old and belong to 17th century. So in theory, it could even be an autograph copy of Battoji's work. Why should Battoji embark on composing a Vedabhasya-sala at all? What were the circumstances of his time and place that might have inspired him to do so? There is no trace of any other manuscript of Bhasya-sala except the one preserved in the community from which hailed Battoji himself. Neither is there a mention of one in the Kavindracharya Suchipatram, a list representing a collection formed probably sometime by the end of Battoji's life. And I managed to locate only three manuscripts of other Battoji's work on the list. While a wide circulation of manuscript must have been a common practice at this time, we learn this among others from Krodapatra or Apaniniya Pramanata, from far off Kerala, that Battoji's Kaumudi probably was widely known, which means circulated in all regions, Desha, sometime by the end of Battoji's life. But let's have a look at the introductory stanzas of Battoji's Vedic commentary. Here, Battoji declares to compose a sara, or essence, out of the work of Madhavacharya, described as Vedabhashya Maha Arnava. Whether what he means by the term Maha Arnava is a particular commentary or a general spirit of a group of Vedic commentaries produced by Madhava Sayana, we cannot say. One way of deciding it is a look into what we are actually left with. In this respect, the commentary that passes by the name of Rigveda Bhashya of Sayana, which however Sayana itself preferred to term differently, namely a Vyakhya. What I'd like to draw your attention to today is not the text of the commentary itself, which is preserved in its probably initial part only, 12 out of 37 vargas that are declared to be the object of this commentary in the beginning, and maybe had never been finished, but to a historical, or some might prefer, meta-historical problem, namely that of our language of representation of the historical sense of the fact that the commentary opening in a particular way has been penned by Battoji at a particular time, place, and circumstances. One cannot fail to notice that Battoji chose to open his essential commentary with a specific stanza, and I insist that this he had done on purpose. The stanza reads, Vagisha adyaha sumanasaha sarvartanam upakrame yam natva krita kritya syuhu tam namami gajananam. To whom, having bowed the masters of speech and others, well disposed when undertaking any of their goals, would accomplish their aim, I bow down to this elephant-faced lord. The stanza must have been recognized by his contemporaries as one signaling a work that claims its place in relation to commentarial works professed or supervised by Madhavacharya Vidyaranya of Sringeri Matha, a pontiff to a once powerful center of religious authority that rose to a considerable position influencing the early Vijayanagara rulers by the end of 14th century. Among the works that open all editions and most manuscripts known to me with this very same verse, there are all the 18 bhashyas composed or attributed to Madhava Sayana. Most of other works attributed to Sayana, works attributed to Sayana, probably authored and traditionally held to be authored by Madhava Vidyaranya, the elder brother of Sayana. This peculiar stanza happens to be commented by Vidyaranya himself in his auto-commentary, Vistara, to his Jaiminiya Nyayamala. In a short gloss, he refers to his own saying in the following words, Svamudra rupam anekartha garbam shlokam pathati, apparently meaning that he voices a verse of more than single sense, and the one which he takes to be his own seal, so to say, a signum. And the verb pathati suggests that it is not a verse by Madhava Vadyaranya himself, at least in his opinion. And indeed, we find several interesting occurrences of it. It makes part of the so-called star verses or supplementary stanzas of the first book of the Adiparvan of Mahabharata and is not included into the text proper by the Pune critical edition. Also, some local renderings of abridged versions of Ramayana tend to insert this shloka in what they call dhyana or meditation verses. We find the shloka also in a number of opening prashastis verses of royal inscriptions preserved from Vijayanagara period. There are other items in the introductory verses that seem to be linking Bhattajissara to the great Vijayanagara project of the Veda Bhasha headed by Madhava Vidyaranya, whose memory must have survived in 17th century Maharashtra. Except the Mangala formulation, recognizable as a signum of Madhava, mentioned already, we have an explicit declaration on the part of Bhattaji stating solemnly that he is drawing an essence, Saram Udriyate, from the immense ocean of the Veda Bhashya by Madhava, Veda Bhashya Maharnavat. Another link is a convention formula pronouncing the scope of the work and apparently fashioned also after the Rig Veda Bhashya by Sayana Madhava. This formula, as the last one of the introductory verses, introduced the reader to a concept of a piece of exemplary commentary that is going to suffice as a guide for further reading. Thus, in the manner of the declaration once proclaimed by Sayana Madhava, also Bhattaji says that what he is offering is a commentary to the first adhyaya only, guided by this, an intelligent reader will make his own way through the rest. Etasmin prathamo adhyayaha shrotavyaha sampradayatam vyutpanna tavata sarvam bodhum shaknoti buddhiman. In this, let the first adhyaya be heard according to the tradition. The wise one who has become thoroughly proficient by that much shall be able to understand all. The only difference is the concluding word. Instead of the wise one, buddhiman, Bhattaji decided to put the pure-minded one, shukadi. Shuddhadi. Now, the formulation presenting the idea of his Vedic commentary as that of a sara or essence resembles in its tenor other wordings by Bhattaji through which he chose to present his other works as essential while calling them the jewels lifted up from the ocean of the sayings of previous authors. This is the case of Tattva Kaustubha and Shabda Kaustubha, as shown recently by Madhav Deshpande. let's try to see how Bhattaji understands what he declares in the preamble to his Veda Bhasha to be a sara, or an essence of the ocean of the commentary composed by Madhava. First, we notice a purposeful mimicry in the rhetoric of the preamble, which recommends to its listeners, Shrotavyaha, that they try to understand the first adhyaya only, while promising that the rest shall be easily understood by the one who is a Shuddhadi. While for reasons unclear to me, Sayana did not keep his word and completed the Bhasha to all eight adhyayas of the Rig Samhita, however, first adhyaya stands out as the most elaborated one, Bhattaji, at least in what came down to us, never completed even the promised first chapter, and out of 37 vargas that make the first adhyaya, we have only 12. There are a few disturbing points in this very brief, at least in what came down to us, Veda Bhasha. First and foremost is a discrepancy between Bhattaji's declaration of his following Madhava's Bhasha and his actual straying from the latter, as well as his rather surprising readiness to accept the Rigvidana as an authoritative pramana, while Madhava seems never to accept this as an authoritative tool for exegesis. Of the long Bhashya Bhumika, which makes a theoretical introduction in Sayana Madhava Bhashya, and which comes down to 23 full A4 printed pages in Max Miller's second edition, Bhattaji's Sara can be represented in print by one single page. The whole bulk of Sayana's argumentation, that follows the rules of debate contextualized by two sets of source texts in the form of sutras of Jaimini and sutras of Purushartha Anushasana, in Bhattaji's Sara there remains only one line referring to the recommendation of the Vedic study according to Kumarila Bhatta, a quotation from Mahabhasha concerned with the with the disinterest study of the Veda with the six ancillary sciences, or Vedangas, as a duty, dharma of a true Brahmana, and from Yaska concerning a futility of the study of the Veda, which does not aim at making sense of its contents, quickly crowned with a Smriti quotation concerning the inescapable need for the knowledge of the deity, the rishi, and the mitra for each of the stanza to be studied. All these quotations are indeed present in Sayana Madhava's introductory Bhumika, but make a somewhat different sense against the views of opponents that are conspicuously absent from the Sara of Bhattaji. What is more, Bhattaji takes a guiding principle, takes as guiding principles two of the quotations which appear indirectly in Sayana as Purva Paksha or Prima Facie arguments. New in the portion that in the standard editions of Sayana do not belong to the introductory Bhumika anymore, but form an introduction to the commentary of the first sukta or hymn, we stumble upon a difference that might seem misleadingly minor. While Sayana introduces his readers into the idea of the application of the mantras of the Rig Veda, he first points to a general application with respect to the whole compendium. He calls it Grantha, delimited by its first and last words, as well as a number of verses in the ritualized personal recitation, saying, Tasya cha granthasya kritsnasya api amnata kramena eva samanya vinyogo brahma yajna japadau purvam eva abhihitaha. Now Bhattaji does not speak of the application of a clearly delimited textual compendium, but of the bulk of memorized tradition, amnayasya kritsnasya, in the ritualized personal recitation, Brahma Yajne, and in another ritualized recitation called Parayana Adav. Instead of Abhihita of Sayana, indicating a back reference to the practices regulated by Shruti, Bhattaji uses Prasiddha, which suggests, to my mind at least, rather an accomplished arrangement that is visibly acknowledged in professed practice of Rigveda Parayana. What could he have in his mind is not clear, but a hint to a possible meaning may be cautiously projected back from the relatively widely spread use of the concept of Veda Parayana among Maharashtra Brahmin groups and attested by late minor manual-like tracts pertaining to the application of Vedic mantras that appeared in early print circulation in the middle of 19th century already in Mumbai and Pune and generally Maharashtra. A handwritten list of manuscripts from Rajapur Pathashala, where the manuscript of Bhattaji Bhasha was to be deposited, features a range of manuals of this sort. Also, other collections emerging from Brahmana communities along the Konkan littoral show texts regulating Parayana of the Rig Veda, Parayana Vidhi, of that sort, which generally speaking takes a form of an arrangement of specific portions to be recited in a specific sequence, given a ritualized form and accompanied by personal rituals. A number of such manuals regulating the practice of Parayana recitation is testified in the manuscript of a Rigveda Kalpadruma, dating probably from the end of 18th century, and an arranged series of them had been edited by Vasudeva Lakshman Panshikar for the Bombay native publisher Ninaraya Sagar, and published first separately by the end of 19th century, and then in the form of a compendium, which now remains in a wide circulation in Maharashtra. All right, thank you. What features prominently in all these late Maharashtan compendiums of Rigvedic manuals is Rigvidhana, and you may not be surprised that we find in Bhattaji's Sara just that, Rigvidhana as one of the authoritative sources for the applications of Rigvedic mantras. In sharp contradistinction to the Bhasha of Sayana Madhava, of which the Sara claims to be an essence, Bhattaji declares the Rigvidhana as an authority text next to that of Sutrakara as far as the Vishesha Vinyoga is concerned. His Sara reads, Rigvidhana adito api avagantavyaha. This seems to be a significant departure from the Sayana's Bhashya, where Shrauta Vinyoga or public ritual appears as the only acknowledged use of Rigvedic mantras worth mentioning. We should perhaps not forget that Sayana was a Taittiriya Yajurvedin, while Bhattaji would probably, as most of Sarasvata Brahmans, at least to my knowledge, belong rather to the Rig Veda fold, but we don't know it for sure. Thus, a family and a particular Brahmana community tradition may have influenced a concept of the work of a commentator, as well as a religious affiliation may have done it too, as suggested yesterday by Sheldon Pollock. The longish bhasha of the first hymn of the Rig Veda Sanhita by Sayana, replete with quotations from Yaskas, Niruktas, Panini, finds only scant reflection in the Sara, which offers a few different etymologies and highlights different points. Also, in its grammatical portion, differs from Sayana among girls in quoting from Rig Pratishakya. The bhasha on the first Rig of the first Sukta ends in both cases, Sayana's and Bhattaji's, with a quotation untraced by Vaidika Sanshodhana edition of the Rig Sanhita. First half of this quotation reads identical, but the second half appears entirely different in Bhattaji. One more striking difference between the two, Bhattaji's Sara lacks formal structure of debate, which with opponents' views clearly marked and fair and formally debated, which was the basic structure of Sayana Madhava's bhashya. We must remember that Sayana himself seems never to call his commentary a bhashya, but rather a vyakya at the same time. Bhashya, however, features prominently in conspicuously standardized colophones of all the Vedic commentaries produced in early Vijayanagara. The colophones, however, may have come from the hands of the editors. Just to conclude, what I'd like to draw your attention to today is not the comment, perhaps we should take more seriously a command introduced in the edition of the manuscript of Bhattaji's Bhashya Sara by the guardian of this manuscript, who presented it to attention of B.K. Gode. According to his remark reproduced in this edition, Bhattaji was to use honorific plural of Veda Bhashya Kara when he needed to corroborate his own opinion in his Vyakarana Granthe, while recording to singular Madhavoktam when he chose to voice a different opinion. Let me close that just with remarking this is just a humble contribution to the problem of how we should represent or perhaps rethink our representation of what it meant to read Rig Veda through a bhashya and what it meant to construct and to present Rig Veda in a certain way, appealing to specific conventions of the time. Thank you very much for your attention.
Merci beaucoup d'avoir regardé.